care of me. But I turn around and you're standing here. How did you get here? Nobody's supposed to be here.
All right, and welcome to the Soul Savvy Show. New time, Thursdays at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 6 o'clock Central, and 7 o'clock on the East Coast. We've got our hosts, Q Lynn, EB, and Whitney. Good afternoon.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Oh, doing good, doing good. A little hot out here in Southern California. I don't know what it is. Don't know what it is in Oklahoma or in New York City. But anyway, it's a little warm out here in Southern California.
Yeah, it's pretty warm. I think everywhere else in the Midwest and I think East Coast is pretty warm. But
It's pretty warm everywhere in the world right now.
Oh my God. And half of California is on fire, folks. Half of California is on fire. But you know what? We'd be remiss if we didn't wish Q Lynn Green a very, very happy birthday. Q Lynn had a birthday.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. But it ain't about me right now. We got a special interview guest we have on. I'm just going to start off. He's a Grammy Award winning producer, songwriter, he's a musician, 23 years in the game. He's produced the hottest, any great classic R&B hit songs. He's probably produced it, worked with Montel Jordan, Deborah Cox, Kelly Price, to me, just to name a few. I don't want to name drop, you know. I can keep going, you know. There's going to be like 5 minutes and we ain't got enough time for all that. But this special guest, I put him in the likes of Babyface, L.A. Reid, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, those prominent, R&B producers. I put him in that upper echelon. So y'all give it up right now, all the listeners, to Mr. Shep Crawford. Give it up. Go ahead, Will, with the clap. There we go. How you doing today? Uh-oh.
Oh,
hold on just a second. Gotta turn you up just a little bit. How you doing there, Shep? Sorry about that.
I'm doing pretty good. You doing all right?
I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I'm great. I'm out here in sunny LA, and it is hot, but we're good. We're doing good. Thank you for
having me on. And I forgot
to
mention he's a pastor as well. The Experience Christian Ministry since 2010.
Yes.
And so, but we're going to get into that a whole little later. I got a whole bunch of questions about that.
All right, let's go. Let's go.
Listen, I'm going to start this off. I'm going to ask my questions, and then I'm going to have my other two lovely co-hosts, E.B. and Whitney, that. But I know I got a whole lot because I'm a music nerd. And so.
Okay. All right, good deal.
I'm going to get all the detail into it. Thank you so much for coming on. I want to start this off. I know you grew up playing in church. That's the sort of the foundation of your whole musicality. So I wanted to know, what age was it that you knew you could write and produce? Like, were you doing that? Were you doing this before 95 with Montel, before you linked up with him? Were you had a lot of writing material?
Yes, you know, I started playing in church at the age of 8, actually. Montel was 10. We were the church musicians, along with the pastor's daughter. And we were getting paid $25 a week. Look here, we were balling in the 80s.
Right, exactly.
I could buy some now laters, eat some now, and save some for later. But we were, so I grew up in, you know, in church playing music, but, you know, I always wanted to do music. As a teenager, I was buying my little four track or I was always trying to write and record on a little tape recorder that had the little red button with the, mm-hmm. for the record button. Since then, even in my 20s, before hooking up with Montel in 95 for the This Is How We Do It run, I was, you know, trying to record. But I was doing a lot of studio work as a musician I did some work for Eazy-E. I did some work on Tupac record that never came out, called I Wonder If Heaven Got a Ghetto. And I was trying to really, really establish myself as a musician. Hopefully that would get me in as a writer, producer. But it wasn't until I hooked up with Montel after 95 that I was able to actually get in the studio and start showing what I've always wanted to do.
Oh, wow. And I've known you have so many hits. The one we just played, the start of the show, Devil Cox, Nobody's Supposed to Be Here, that one, I know it charted on the, like, it was number one on the charts for, like, 18 weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was number one for 14 weeks in a row.
14 weeks, right.
And it broke the record. It was the, you know, at that time, it was the longest running R&B number one ever. It broke the record,
and, I heard that you were supposed to get a song. It was four songs. Wait, no, it was just the three. You were writing it you were thinking about giving it to Patti LaBelle, and then to me, A Stranger in My House, you were thinking about Toni Braxton having it, and then I think Deborah Cox's RL, that We Can't Be Friends song was supposed to be 98 Degrees, is that right?
Yes, yes. Why are we doing their homework, man?
Oh, man.
I tried to.
What was that Cisco song? Was that intended for him as well?
Cisco, The Incomplete was written for an artist by the name of Sam Salter. I don't know if you remember him from the 90s. We wrote it for Sam Salter. Sam Salter was signed to LaFace Records, and LaFace sought me out to write a song for him, just kind of giving him one of those very secure songs, but still romantic, and therefore we went in the studio and came out with Incomplete. He demoed the song, and he did a great job on the song. To this day, I don't know why they didn't take it, but they didn't. I ended up playing it for Jaha from Def Jam. He took it to Kevin Lyles, and it ended up on Cisco and became my third number one record.
Crazy. And then that 98 was such like a jumble of year, because I remember all the songs, like they were like everywhere, like the music videos, it felt like a continuous thing, like with all those songs. So, like, were all those songs written at the same time, or was it like Deborah? I know Deborah Cox, that song was like the one, like your first, like number one, like that went really big. But was all those songs written at the same time?
Well, almost. I mean, and I think in the same era, you know, within maybe 2 years. But the Nobody's Supposed to Be Here song was written years before it came out. It took a long time for it to get placed, and then after it got placed, it took a long time for it to come out. Just music was in a whole different direction at that time, with the whole staggered beat that that Timberland and his camp was doing, and so Nobody's Supposed to Be Here. It kind of had a very old school gospel feel. It was difficult for people. They loved the record, but it was difficult for people to commit to it. And a lot of people had a hard time believing that it was going to work at radio. And so it wasn't until Clive actually had it recorded on Depra and played it in a meeting. And in that meeting, it got a standing ovation, and he decided that it was going to be the single. It was after that where the phone just started ringing, so we had to take off, you know. And so then it was Stranger in My House, then it was Incomplete, and some of those songs sat around for a few years before it got placed as well. We Can't Be Friends, which was written before Nobody's Supposed to Be Here, sat around for a long time too. So we just thank God that he might not come when we want him, but he's always on time.
Right, exactly. And your style of writing is so, like, visual. Like, when I hear it, like, the reason why I feel like your production stand out, because I'm, like, visualizing it like a cinematic, like a video production. Like I can tell, like, it's going to be, like, a video to it soon, because that's how you're, like, making the style of it. That's what it seems like. So I wanted to know, I feel like the reason why I feel like your production stand out is because it's just it's a little theatrical, a little bit. Was that always the intent? Like, when was that moment to where you like, this is my style of writing?
Yes, I wanted to almost, you know, write a movie in the song, if you will. I remember the night that I wrote "Stranger in My House." I was in the studio, and the studio time was paid for, and I was having writer's block, and so I told the engineer to shut it down. I'm getting ready to go to a movie. And I went to go see The Sixth Sense. And when I got out of the movie, I asked the engineer to meet me back at the studio. And she did. And, you know, we've got Stranger in My House. Sixth Sense had such a big twist at the end. I said, I'm going to write a song that got a big twist, you know, at the end, or, you know, one of those songs that make you think. And I think I've always kind of been inspired by We Can't Be Friends. I watched the last episode of Joni and Chachi. You might be too young to know about Joni and Chachi, but spinoff of Happy Days, and they had broke up. And I remember him saying that I can't be your friend because I still love you. And I always said as a kid that I wanted to write that. So I very much have been inspired by what I've seen, and then being able to kind of tell a story the way that it's been sung or told, but using kind of a different way of telling it. So Stranger in My House is pretty much saying my man is acting different, but I didn't want to do a song to say, why are you acting different? I wanted to say, there's a stranger in my house. No, there's no way this could be you. I'm checking your shoes. I'm checking your clothes. Like, you look like the dude, but there's no way, because my man wouldn't treat me like that. Or Nobody's Supposed to Be Here was pretty much a song that's saying, I'm through looking for love. And when you decide that you are through looking for love is when love will find you. But I didn't want to say that. I wanted to say, you know, how did you get here? Like, I turn around. I thought I just closed the door to love outside. I turn around, and you just snuck on in here. And so I always wanted to make it a visual, and so when I write, when I sit at the piano and I write, I'm always thinking. I'll get up and I walk around and I'm trying to think of the visual or act it out, and then, you know, put the pen back to the paper and try to make it happen.
Wow, that's crazy. It's because I didn't know that. I think I heard a little bit where you expound a little bit more, because that sounds like you like finding a creative way to say something, like besides like the typical like R&B song, like love and hate type of song. So I want to get to the musicianship. Because I'm a musician nerd. I'm a musician, so I want to get all these out here before I take up too much time. But I always quote the jazz musician Sonny Rollins. He said something that like always stuck with me as a musician. He said, when I was playing, I just wanted to get the technical part as best I could and then leave the other part to the universal spirit. And I feel like that's like most of the common traits I see in like producers that have like gospel background, that's always a part of them. So I connected it with what he was saying, because he's saying that he just like whatever that is. Is that a part of your chord progression? Because I feel like you got like the best R&B chords, like top five. So I just want to know, like, when you're like creating a melody on the piano, is it like the same thought process like songwriting?
Yes. You know, I was privileged to have a parent that brought me up listening to a lot of R&B and a lot of gospel. My mom, particularly in the mornings, on the way to work, would play her cassette tape or 8-track of the Hawkins, James Cleveland, Shirley Caesar, Mighty Clouds of Joy, Bark Sisters. But when she picked us up from the babysitter or from a school or whatever, she was listening to the radio stations, so Earth, Wind, and Fire, and Charlie Wilson, and we got a chance. So I always had that, and Saturday mornings, R&B, Sunday mornings, gospel. So I've always been a lover of both, and tried to figure out how can I always merge both to give, you know, R&B that special feel that gives you those chills. I think as a musician, it was difficult for me because, you know, coming from the church, being a musician in the church, you kind of want to flex. You know, they love for you to hit the special stuff. But then when you write R&B music, it's about simplicity. I think at a time growing up in the church, I probably looked at George Duke as my protege, if you will, or Michael Brooks, who was a member of Commission. And later on down the line, I started to appreciate piano playing like Lionel Richie. That was more simple. Sheryl Crow said, if a song has more than 6 chords, you know, you're doing too much. So I had to kind of learn how to bring it in and make sure that I can let them know that I'm there, I can let them know that I can play, but at the same time make sure I do music that make you feel. And so it's very important as I'm writing that I feel it. That way if someone walked in and I wanted to sing to them the song that I was writing without no track or anything, I wanted to hit those chords that gave you emotions before I even said a word. And so it's very important that the music had those progressions. I wanted songs that if you were riding with your friend or your mate and you had the radio down and a song came on, I wanted you to turn it up and say, shh, to everybody else, like, be quiet, everybody, what's that? And so that was important for me to start Nobody's Supposed to Be Here the Way It Starts, or Stranger in My House, or Incomplete. Very much that intro had to capture you before any words came in.
Yes. It's like the intro. That's what draws you into the song, the string arrangement. And, I have too many questions popping in my head. I'm going to stick to the one. Okay. I will shift to your pastor. You've been how long in total have you been a pastor? I know you've been pastor of your church for since 2010, but how long have you like in total been a pastor?
Yeah, I've been a minister almost half my life. I started. I was a licensed minister at the age of 19, but when my music career took off, which I was at the age of 24, a lot of the local churches kind of had a problem with the fact that I was doing R&B music, and I'm holding up the quotations sign. and so a lot of my preaching engagements stopped. A lot of people didn't necessarily want me to preach in their church. Felt like I had crossed over and I was playing the devil's music. I made sure that I was the person on the road. You know, I was the reverend on the road, and my congregation at that point was anyone who would listen. So on the road, I became that person that everybody came to my room on Sundays and got a word before they went out and did what they needed to do or counsel with me. And I told God in 96 that as long as he allowed me to do music, you know, I would do it. And if he was ready to bring me in to do something else, you know, to don't do it drastically, you know, but to kind of knock me over my head and let me know that it's time for me to do something else. And he did, you know, so I knew that it was time to do something else. I just didn't know what it was. And so when pastoring came around, actually it was first the church that I was, that I grew up in. That pastor, the one who taught me music, Reverend Richard Stubbs, he was retiring and wanted me to come pastor that church. However, the deacon board and the people, the powers that be, didn't necessarily see eye to eye with him. So in that case, my wife and I discussed maybe just starting our own ministry. And we went and we prayed about it, and we asked God for three specific signs, and he gave us all three. And so in 2010, my wife and I started the Experienced Christian Ministries, also known as ECM. And it is, we're going on 8 years now, and it took off much quicker than we thought. It's a church kind of for people who don't like church, or people who are skeptics on church, or tired of church, or was mad because their mom took them to church, and so at 18 they left, and now at 30 they're back. And it it grew much faster. Within year one, we had 100 people, and so it called for more of my time to concentrate there. And I told God that, you know, I would still continue doing music until he tell me to retire, but that pastoring was going to be my main focus. And so I'm semi-retired when it comes down to the music. I still record. I have a few projects coming out. I just recorded on Tamia's new album. I have three songs with her. I'm actually working on some music that's going to come out next year that I can't necessarily talk about in details right now. But pastoring has, you know, and ministering has been my focus. I think that's where I am now. In God, and I think that's where he wants me. Right. So, and I'm good with it.
But you're actually leading into my next question. I only got like three more, so I won't hog everybody's time. We're going to go to break. We're going to go to break after I ask some questions so my other co-host can ask you questions. But I was going to say, like, if I follow I think I follow you and your church, the ECM on Facebook, and Listen, you leading into, my point that I want to make, I've heard you play R&B music in your church. I feel like what drives people is that aspect of your career and sort of like, in sort of making that all come together at your church. And I think people see that realness. I would say here, I say it all, I don't know if I've mentioned it on the show, but actually Tamia, the song we're getting ready to play when we get to go break is, Tamia's, Last First Kiss. And I remember that's when I realized I wanted to play hearing those chords, because I was like I was just playing it by ear, and I was like, oh, this is the note for it. And then I just started figuring out the chord structure around it. And I started, when it was an organ player at the church I was going to, he was asking me to play. That was the song I used to play to me as Last First Kiss during service. So when I heard you play like Bobby Caldwell, I heard you play Bobby Caldwell at the church and all kind of, what was it, you playing Al Green. So I was like, that's why I'm trying to tell them, listen, that all that runs together, like in terms of gospel, R&B, all that in the same vein. But I wanted to ask, how does it feel to have like a devoted congregation that accepts that extension of yourself as being in the music industry, playing R&B music?
You know what, it's great. I think there is there's a way that it has to be done. So when I do it, let's say for instance, if I'm teaching on marriage, at the end, you know, I have couples join me on stage and we'll do Let's Stay Together. So it makes sense, you know,
right,
whether
exactly.
Times are good or bad, happy or sad, or the musicians might play Jill Scott, Living My Life Like It's Golden during the offering or during the times where everybody's getting up and greeting, and it's making people, feel good. Or, the band might play, you know, some songs that have a positive, or I'll get up and say, you know, though you may not drive a great big old Cadillac, Gangsta White Walls, TV antenna in the back.
Right.
You may not have a car at all, but just be thankful for what you got. You know what I mean? Because the song is really saying, be thankful even though you don't have a diamond in the back, some rooftop, dipping in the scene against it. The song is really saying, be thankful for what you got. You might not have that, but be thankful for what you got. So I make it make sense. Or if I'm talking about Moses is going to the top of the mountaintop to pray with God and have devotion, the band will kick in and you need devotion, bless the children. Yeah. But the song is pretty much saying, you know, praise the teacher who brings life to many. Like, so there are songs, R&B songs that have that message that we never really paid attention to the message. So I'll make it relevant and make them understand, you know, kind of what's going on. So the crowd get it. But I remember in year two, the band, Ill Advised tried to play Outstanding, by the Gap Band.
Gap Band.
Doing Offering. And then I whispered to the MD to stop, change the song. So afterwards, he's like, I thought it was cool to play R&B song. No. I said, you can't play Outstanding, Girl, You Knocked Me Out. Like, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't fit.
Well, I guess I was doing it wrong then, because I was one of those musicians like that. I was playing Pink a lot of City, so I was going all the way left with it.
You can put it in a song. Or
right.
Yeah, but you don't want to, you know, so there's a way to kind of get it done, or put it under a song. But if you're playing an instrumental, you know, you just want to be careful on how you do it. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but I try to always make sure that the people know that there's a message to it as well, too. And I'm bold like that, so I get a lot of criticism for it. But I believe that R&B music, which is pretty much love songs, started in the Bible with the Book of Solomon, the Song of Songs, where he was writing love songs to his woman, and she was writing love songs back. And so God put that in the Bible. He showed us love, and we left it up to the streets to write about love, and the church wouldn't just write about God. But the Bible says that God is love, and the church should be the one showing people how to have love between a man and a woman and writing those songs. When I'm with my wife, I don't want to hear Shirley Caesar. I don't want to hear James Cleveland when I'm with my wife a Sunday evening. You know, I want to hear something romantic, and, you know, I would love for it to be, you know, written by Christians. And so I'm not scared of taking that mantle and running with it. And I'm hoping that hopefully this is the start of something. And in 5 years, it won't be so unique that we're able to play what is considered secular songs in the service, as long as it relates to what is being talked about.
But I only have one more question before we go to break and have my co-host ask you questions. Is your music, you've done music directing, and I just want to know, what is the feeling of the difference between those two for you? Because I know you do both of those on whatever project you're, or the selective of who it is you're working with, you'll do music directing. But I wanted to know, like, how does it feel? How does it fulfill the same purpose doing those things? Is it like the added audience that makes the work impactful? Seeing audience, like the music directing, what you've created, like what's the? I guess I'm trying to see if it's like a synonymous feeling of doing both of those things, or is it just the added audience with doing music directing is why you do it still?
Well, yeah, music directing is how I got into the business professionally. So a lot of artists know that. So when I worked with Debra, I end up being her MD. When I worked with Kelly Price, I end up being her music director. Tamia, I'm still pretty much her executive music director. In fact, she's getting ready to go out on tour, and I'm leaving for a week to make sure the band and everything is together. You know, I've done music direction for a lot of Def Jam artists, even Timberland, and when it comes down to a lot of artists over the years, Kenny Lattimore. And I think one of the things is that I love it because it gives me a chance to kind of help the show, you know, put a great show together without the show being over the top. I can put my Christian influence on the show. to support someone like Kelly Price, who is a woman of God herself, and know that, you know, when she wants to go to church, she, you know, I'm right there behind her, ready to take it there, no matter if we're in the club or not. So I've always loved, you know, doing that as well, too. And so I always wanted to keep that, you know. Of course, when I started producing and writing more in demand, I couldn't necessarily be on the road as much. But what I would do is I would put the band together, you know, rehearse, and then send the band out without me and maybe go to the first show to make sure that it worked out great. Because a lot of the artists that I work with, I'm also vested in just their career, not just that project. And so that's why I work with them so long. Whereas Tamia, I've been on every album except her first album. You know, we talk every week, whether we're recording a record or not. And the same with Depra, the same with Kelly, you know, Yolanda Adams, and so many other people. So I like to stay in that as much as I can and just kind of have an influence on it. And it kind of helps me. I'm not a, you know, I'm a pastor now, so I don't get a chance to play much at the church. So it kind of helps me also feed the little kid in me that loved the stage.
Right. What we're going to do right here, we're going to go take a quick break okay. Real quick and have my other, I know I hogged up all the time. But I had so many questions.
Okay.
I had to ask. But when we come back from break, this song we're about to play to me is Last First Kiss. Written and produced by Shep Crawford. So,
will
we be back?
Yes.
So, and we'll be back right after the break.
Can I talk to you for a second? I just have a few things I want to tell you. Don't be nervous. When it comes to you, I wouldn't change a thing. I wouldn't even change the things I could change. Cause baby, you're perfect, perfect to me. Simply means that you are perfect for me. You're the answer to a prayer I haven't prayed. Got me ready to settle down. I think I wanna stay. I'm falling in love with you. I'm so feeling all of this. Baby, I'm praying that you're my last first kiss. Baby, won't you be my last time kissing somebody for the very first time? All my letters say la 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 la, our first time making love. Baby, I pray that this is the last time that I made love to for the very first time. You're the last somebody to take me home to meet his mom and dad. I hope that it's the last first time I say I love you. Hope that it's the last first time you say you love me too. Don't wanna ever kiss and say goodbye. If you just wanna kick it, then you're wasting my time. Cause my plan is to not just have a hidden queen. My plan is to make you
That's Tamia, Last First Kiss. And welcome back to the Soul Savvy Show with E.B. Q-Lynn Green, Whitney, and special guest, Mr. Shep Crawford.
Hey.
I just love that
bottom
note.
That is absolutely one of my favorites, man. Like, that song, I remember when that album came out, and I think that song and Become Us were my two favorites, but that song was one that I instantly gravitated to. If you're just tuning in to Soul Savviness Radio, we are interviewing legendary musician, songwriter, and producer Shep Crawford. I mean, you worked with Tamia and Whitney Houston, Deborah Cox, Kelly Price. You have the fortune of working with great vocalists. How do you write for a voice like a Yolanda Adams? Like, what is the process that you go through?
Well, you know, I've always loved singers, you know, so I study singers. I've always loved, I think, you know, with Nobody's Supposed to Be Here coming out. And as you know, I originally wrote it for Patti LaBelle. And so I've always thought, I want to always write the song that's going to make the singer stretch, hit those money notes, make people be like, that girl or that dude can sing. And so I approach it like that. I approach it, particularly if I'm working with singers, I approach it like, you know, how am I going to write for Kelly Price after she just came out with Friend of Mine? Like, okay, now she wants me to cover As We Lay. Like, so what do I do? Okay, you got to make sure that you throw something in there to let them flex and you know, and stay with that so people can always still call her a vocal beast. And so I do the same, you know, the same thing with Tamia. And I knew she can really sing. And I knew that she hadn't had that song yet that, you know, that could really flex and do that. So I want A Stranger in My House to represent both her soft voice, you know, which is on the verses, her soft savviness, and then at the end, but I wanted her to, you know, okay, to me, it's time to take off and show them your range and hold those notes long and give the emotions. And so I always thought, with a live mentality when it came down to working with vocals. And I think, with that and coupled by God's grace, I've been able to work with some of the best, of our time and have been very grateful to do so.
It's amazing. I was at a concert last night, and what you said just now sort of touched on my next question. I was at a concert last night, and it was a Mickey Howard concert, and Melissa Morgan got up on the stage, and together they just ripped it. There's a huge discussion right now about the new generation of singers. There's something they're lacking. Some people say they're quote unquote unchurched. How do you feel about that statement that the new singers are unchurched, and what do you feel that gospel music's place is on the R&B scene?
Well, you know, I think, of course the music thing has really changed. I don't know if they're searching for the singers as they used to. As you can tell, you know, most of the singers that we came up on grew up, in the church, and you can hear that conviction in their voices. A Gladys Knight, you know, who I had the privilege of working with, such a, you know, unique voice, and, Anita Baker, who I didn't have the privilege of working with, but, she's one of my favorites. And I think one of their uniqueness is the thing that kept them around, but someone had to take a chance on their uniqueness. And I don't know if people are taking that chance today on a person's unique voice. So, you can't listen to the radio today and besides maybe Cardi B, you know, we have to ask, who is that? You know what I mean? Because they all kind of sound alike. Like, who is that? Okay, now who's that? I have to ask my kids. Okay, now who sings that? But you never really had to ask that when Charlie Wilson was on. You never really had to ask that, you know, when back in the 90s, really. Or the 60s and 70s and 80s and different things of that sort. So I think that's one of the things that changed. I don't know if when I say the unchurched, I think those singers are still out there. I mean, the ones that did grow up in church are just not getting the shine right now. Music has become, the music business has become just business. And so what's happening, I believe, is that back in the day, the music business would make you popular. They would find somebody who wasn't popular, who had a great voice, and they would make them popular. Right now, they're kind of just sitting back watching the reality shows that's making the people popular and then putting them on records. So they don't have to do that work anymore of trying to break an artist because the artist is already popular. So I think that is damaging to the ones that are, I think we're missing out on a bunch of talent. And I do believe that there is a certain period in this era of music that will kind of be forgotten or won't be talked about as one of the decades that's memorable when it comes down to great R&B music.
Wow, you've mentioned the singers today, like turning on the radio and having to ask who is that. It's something that Dionne Warwick recently said. You know, when you hear a Dionne Warwick record, you know it's her. When you hear a Gladys record, you know it's her. A Patti record, same for Aretha. I think you're spot on, and you hit on something that's the difference. You know, we turn on the radio today, and we don't know who's who. It's almost like everyone's competing to be the same manufactured version of everyone else.
Right.
And that is, to me, you know, somebody who loves music, that's scary. I know you've worked with, you know, the greats, all the voices, but then you've also worked with people like Shay Jones, and Talk Show is one of my favorites. I still play that like it just came out, and like the Sam Salters, like when you work with, people like this and they don't stay on the scene for long, are those people that you stay in touch with?
Yes, you know, Shay, because, you know, she came out of the Montel camp, so most definitely. You know, she came on as a background singer, and you know, for Shay, what happened is that Shay was demoing all of our records, and then people started asking, "Who is that? Who's the girl?" So, you know, when she demoed Talk Show, I think we was doing it for Mary J. Blige, or someone, and Universal said, you know, who's the girl? You know, so that's how. So, of course, I stayed in touch with Shay over the years. But Gina Thompson is one I kind of stayed in touch with for a little while, and then kind of reconnected, of course, with social media. But like Sam Salter or someone that I didn't necessarily, I might have just did a one record with, we don't necessarily stay in contact. Little Mo was another person that I worked with and I had a chance to kind of stay in contact with. Kenny Lattimore I did, you know, a record with. And stayed in contact with. In fact, I became his music director for a good 1 or 2 years before I started doing ministry full time. But I love those artists, particularly the artists that passed up on the record on the songs. You know, I wonder how they feel, like, you know, pass up on Incomplete and then it becomes number one or. But at the end of the day, you know, I think, you know, we've all have messed up or missed on some opportunity in life, and we just keep moving forward. So I'm doing the same, wish everybody luck. But I kind of, you know, when it comes down to Deborah, to Mia, Kiki Wyatt, a lot of the singers that I've worked with, more than one or two records, you know, is great. Even Luther, before he passed, you know, we kept in contact with each other. I remember the last time I talked to him, he was on the couch watching All My Children, and he asked me, "Was I by my piano?" And I told him yes, and he was by his piano, and he wanted to figure out background notes to I'd Rather, so he can teach it to his background singers for live.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. You you mentioned Little Mo, and that's actually one of the songs that we're going to play tonight, Ta-Da, which is another favorite of mine. And your writing style is, in this day and age, is very distinct in that the way you write, they're narratives and they tell stories. Songs like Ta-Da or even Stranger in My House or Kelly Price's Metamorphosis, they tell very specific stories. Is there something special? I know earlier you said that you mentioned like with movies. Is there something special that you do to be able to tell those stories and, you know, keep it as traditional as it is without it sounding dated or sounding played out?
I think it's a God-given a talent. You know, when I listen to, you know, when you hear Ta-Da, that's what people say when they, you know, when they're trying to surprise someone. They do it on key, you know, and you hear that Ta-Da behind it. And and so I thought, yo, I'm going to do a Ta-Da, like really just pretty much saying, you know, I need you to be gone, and trying to find a way to say it. And people, you know, think that it's, you know, hey, that's clever. Or I did a song called Same Script, Different Cast for Deborah Cox and Whitney Houston. And when I said, when Whitney was singing, or Deborah was, you know, singing, she said, "Don't say no more, la 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 la." I'm not. You can see her in your head, putting her fingers up to her ear.
Yeah.
And so I tried to make sure that it was a real conversation that seemed like we sung a real conversation instead of writing a conversation that would be sung. And so, you know, I pictured those two sitting on a bench and, you know, and Deborah arriving late and Whitney saying, you know, "Thank you for being warm enough to come." And Deborah taking off her shades and saying, "Whitney, you know, what is this about?" You know, and so there, if I can get that visual in my head, you know, "I know he's leaving me for you. Who told you that? Who said that?" You know, and so I try to make sure that I'm always able to get the visual. I play a movie in my mind, if you will, as I'm writing it, and then keep the curiosity going. Address the pain in the song, even if it's a love song. The first song, the first verse has to address the pain. So Nobody's Supposed to Be Here is a love song, but she has to talk about in her first verse how she spent all her life trying to find this, and love has knocked her down. We got to draw in the people who are still in that place. So when they hear Nobody's Supposed to Be Here, and they're like, "Well, hell, I haven't found my loved one yet, but baby, I'm hopeful now because she just told me her story." So I wanted to do that, and also, you know, I'm saying, make sure that I, you know, come with the solution of it, the beautiful story, that make the people say, you know, that I can listen to this all the time. So I'm always thinking about that when I'm writing. I'm always thinking about what words would make people say, "Oh, I never thought about it that way." Even when I'm preaching, my subjects, my titles of my sermon, I always try to do something that make the people think. So it's good.
Mm. Yeah. Now that you tie the two together. I come from a family full of pastors, and that makes a lot of sense. Like, you want to hit with something that's relatable and that will draw people in, and you definitely do that through your writing. My last question, now everybody, you know, knows and loves all of your R&B productions, but you've actually had some great gospel productions. One of them, it was on Coco's first gospel album, which I love. Is there a difference, or do you prefer one over the other, producing and writing for R&B or gospel?
I love writing for gospel. I really do, because my kind of style of writing is kind of wide open. You know, I don't, you know, if you listen to my gospel songs, they're not the regular Hallelujah, bless his name. He's worthy to be praised. I think that he's oversaturated. And I remember writing with my son, who also is starting to write and produce now. And we were listening to, we was coming from church, and we were listening to a gospel station, and three songs played, and he said, "Dad, you know, is gospel really like that? Like, everybody's saying the same exact thing." So I appreciate, like, the Kirk Franklins and the Donald Lawrences and Fred Hammonds and Yolanda Adams and the Mary Marys and people who actually kind of write outside of that box. And I've always kind of wanted to be that person. I've always had the respect from gospel, from the gospel artists or the gospel side. I don't know why I didn't do more. It wasn't necessarily that I didn't choose to do more. I think most gospel labels or artists that got me to write was those that was kind of breaking into more commercial. So Yolanda Adams, you know, would hit me up and say, "I'm working on a record." And I know she was signed to Elektra, which was a primary secular label. Or when I worked with Karen Clark on a Yolanda Adams record, she was actually getting ready to sign with a secular, but still doing gospel as well, too. And so I think a lot of people may grab me for that to kind of help cross them over to what that is. But I've always loved it. I think just my R&B phone was the one that was ringing off the hook. But anytime the gospel came in, I tried to make it happen. I put out a record on an artist of mine called The Church Girl, on Hidden Beach. And it was a great album. Hidden Beach actually, lost their, inspiration department right after we put it out. So some things happened there. But I've always loved doing gospel music in the way that I would do it. That's kind of out of the box that it is being done, in the sense that it's kind of being done or have been done for years.
That's wild. I like to say, and I'm not going to give away your exact age, but you were born in that what I call the sweet spot in between 68 or 67 and I'll say 74. And I say this for singers, but the same goes for songwriters, musicians, and producers, in that you were born in an era where you got to witness Motown and Stax and Philadelphia International. But at the same time, you were there for the creation and evolution of hip-hop as a genre. You know, disco, boogie, new jack swing, hip-hop soul, like, you guys were right there, so I think as a whole, your music, your musicality, your taste, they're more rounded than anyone else. So I definitely appreciate everything that you've done and that you're continuing to bring to the table in terms of music and in terms of being a pastor. I love that you do it all like a modern day Superman. Whitney, if you have any questions, I'll pass it to you.
Thank you. Yeah, I just have a few. One, just kind of following up on something you mentioned earlier. You said that as you were writing the music, that some of the members, like of the congregation and things like that, they weren't really comfortable with it. And because of that, that led to some people not really following or supporting what you were doing at that time. And so I wondered, like, how did that experience shape, like, your ministry and the church that you have now? Like, did that have anything to do with the way you went about creating the church that you currently have?
Yes, you know, it mostly did, because I think what happens is that when the church do things like that, you know, shun you because they don't like how you're living or what you're doing, most people will say, "Fine then, forget the church and forget God," because they feel like the church is a representation of God, and the church is saying God doesn't want you doing that, or he doesn't, you know, if you're going to do that, you can't do this. And people will be like, you know, forget it then. And so I didn't say forget God. What I did do, it made me dig in the Bible even more to make sure that I was right, you know. and, you know, to find the Song of Solomon, and to find out that he was much more descriptive than the stuff that I say. You know, he was saying things like, let her breast please you. And I wasn't saying anything like that. I was saying, you know, nobody's supposed to be here, stranger in my house.
Right.
I'm like, you know, you got to go after Solomon. He's the first R&B writer, you know what I'm saying, recorded, you know. But I had to find out the truth, and which led to a lot of the truth in many different areas. And so one of the things, you know, that, you know, I grew up believing that, you know, that, you know, once you were baptized, you know, that you, you know, had to live right. And if you sinned, you were going to hell. And then, but everyone sins. So I was trying to figure out how does that work? And when I went back to restudy the Bible, I found out that, that God knows that even when we're saved, that we are going to sin, even when we don't want to, even when we're trying. And the fact that what he does is, you know, he understands that and gives us the desire to do right, and we get better, but we'll never be 100% right when it comes down to our actions. But God makes us right in his eyes by the sacrifice of his son. And so, therefore, I remove the judgment, and I tell people at the church, you know, I don't care if you got weed in your back pocket. You know, I don't care if you just came from the club and you ain't got time to go home and change. I don't care. Come. So let me preach the word. My job is to preach God's love. My job is to love them, and it's God's job to change them. And you'll die with things or sins or weights that you didn't get rid of, but you can get better than you were last year. So the thing of it is to keep getting better through Christ, and to be able to find your purpose. Why are you here? Because if you're on earth, there's something God wants you to do. He don't just want you to survive. He wants you to live. Why are you here? What are you here for? What is your particular purpose? And so those things, I had to find out, you know, why God had me go through the long route of doing music for so long, then coming in and pastoring. Mm-hmm. And he made all of that a part of my ministry. And so I think what comes from the heart kind of reaches the heart, and that's kind of the reason why the church have grown as fast as it has in the time that it's existed, because of me being Sean from the church made me very sensitive to Sean and people from the church.
Wow, that's amazing. I actually, I was telling my fiance earlier, we've been in this horrible process of buying cars and talking back and forth with dealerships and all this other stuff. And you mentioned a diamond in the back earlier, and I thought it was so perfect because I actually played that song for him today after we left one of the car dealerships. And I was like, listen to this song. Like,
oh, wow.
It's about humility. It's about,
yeah,
like, you
yeah
know, everything isn't exactly where I want it just yet, but
right,
you know, you'll get there. Like, look at all the work you're putting in, look at all this stuff. No matter what people are saying about you, you keep going. And so this is just another step. This is a milestone in, you know, what's going to come later. And so I wonder, with you, because with everything that you've done, you're very, very much accomplished. But you're so humble, and like how you speak about life and things, it's very, like, I find it soothing. So how did you get to that point? Like, how did you find your purpose? Like, what brought you to where you are now with all of these different experiences?
Yeah, I remember, and I have no problem telling my story. I remember, you know, I had a lot of success in the music business, and it was kind of back to back. And I remember everyone telling me in the music business, like, it don't last long. Try to get as much as you can, you know, while you're in it. And I remember kind of when hip-hop kind of broke in and took over, if you will. And so I remember one prominent CEO telling me at a meeting that, Shep, you, and I always remember these words. He said, Shep, you write great music that has no place in today's hip-hop. And then another CEO in that same New York run that I did in meetings, took his jacket off as I was playing music and kind of walked around the office and was dancing a little bit, grooving, and said, it's so refreshing to hear real music again, and shook my hand and said that he had to go. And so I remember walking through Central Park asking God, what is it? If you know, what is it that you want me? You got my attention. What is it? If not this, what is it? And of course I got no answer there because, you know, God plays the waiting game.
Right.
And then it started taking back off again, but I still didn't feel fulfillment. So I realized that, you could be successful and still not be fulfilling your purpose. So I had to ask God, why am I here? I'm not here to play music. That's my gift. The Bible says your gift will make room for you and bring you before great people. But what do I do when I get to the great people? You know, and yeah. So my gift was, I found out my gift was to inspire, to explain God, in a way that the church is really not explaining him, to make it plain and simple for the people. Make them say, I get it, to bring scripture to today's time and make people understand that a problem doesn't have a size until you give it one. What you think about the most is the problem in your mind. And so many things, so I started telling my testimony and really, really, you know, seeing that God has moved me to a different place. And it's funny because when I started doing my purpose is when I started kind of winning Grammys and later on, music, you know, started kind of taking off again. But for me, my focus had changed. I made God the foundation of it again. That way, I can say, like Paul, whether I'm up or whether I'm down, I'm content. Even if I'm not complacent, I'm content. You got rich people that are sad. Always say sad faces dwell in big houses. So you got rich people who are sad, and everybody's looking up to them saying, I wish I had what they had, and they're killing themselves. Right. You know what I mean? So we have to learn how to, God is not going to bless us like that until we learn how to be content with what we have, because he don't want us to fall in love with what he gives us. He wants to fall in love with the giver. So I found my purpose, and I always tell people, if you ever want to find your purpose, see what grieves you the most. What grieves you the most may be a clue to what you're assigned to fix. The purpose will always serve to help somebody else, and to be an answer to someone else. What makes you upset? Rosa Parks, her anger caused the civil rights movement. What grieves you the most? What is the thing that bothers you the most? What do you find yourself pulling to? That's how you start to find your purpose. And so now that I found mine, I'm good, and everything that I do has to come from the foundation of that purpose, or I can't accept it.
Wow, that's a very grounded statement. Thank you for that. Like, out here dropping knowledge bombs on people. That is great. and then, yeah, go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead.
So just my final one, and you can pick anyone, past, present, living, deceased. Is there anybody that you would like to now, write for? And if so, what type of story could you see yourself, creating for them? Since you mentioned a lot, you like to actually tell a story in your writing.
Probably Celine Dion.
I can see that too.
Yeah.
She's probably on the top of my wish list. She was one of the people who I didn't get a chance to write with, and has always been on my wish list. And if I was to sit down at a piano and write for her, I would probably do a song that kind of has the sentiment of What a Wonderful World, but not. I would talk about the things that she's seen over her life, and the fact that she's still here. Kind of, it'd be one of those reflective songs that I think that I would that I that I would have her do. But anybody that I, you know, wanted to write for, I end up, you know, getting their songs. Back in the day, I would get their records, but now getting their songs and listening to and trying to figure out something that they haven't said yet or something. If there's a legend, I want it to be reflective. You know, this is the woman I am today. Everything that has happened to me has made me the woman I am today. They kind of represent where they are, their view now. And for one, I think, you know, it would be playing that song for them would be emotional, and would be something that they would be eager to do. And the second thing is that it would kind of help tell their story, the story that has not been told in the song. So I would probably go that route in writing for the legends that I haven't written for.
Nice. I said those are my last questions, but I swear it's just three. It's just real quick. I was just gonna say it real quick.
Okay,
The Kelly Price, the last album of hers, the Sing Pray Love, Volume 1 in 2014, that I Love song, this is just for me. This ain't, I try to be general, but this is just a personal question.
Okay.
What was, that bass, this is so nerdy, but what was that bass synth, that whole riff in that? What was that? Did you, was that a bass synth? What was
song?
It that you used to make that bass I Love on that album?
Oh, yes. We you know, of course, we were going for the off-the-wall feel.
What song is it? Because that was going to be my I want to cheat code the what song, because I knew it was Michael Jackson, like, inspired, but what song is, like, in particular, because this is a cheat code for me.
Let me see. I know off-the-wall. I think we just kind of played the album and said that we wanted to do a song like that, but it wasn't one in particular, and it could have been.
I was thinking Get on the Floor. That's what I was thinking.
Oh yeah, that could be, yeah. That could be it.
Oh my God! Now I gotta mix that. I MD gigs of do corporate and then just regular back end for artists, but I'm about to mix that in there because that's what I was thinking. Thank you for that.
No problem.
It was
no problem. Yeah, we had fun making that.
Oh my God. And then the only one I had, I think I asked you on Twitter some years ago, you had produced that Kiki Watts Mira featuring Kelly Price and Tweet, and I asked you, did you produce that? He was like, yeah, I produced that. But I want to know, were they all three in the studio when they did that?
No. The original song was written by myself and Montel Jordan for what was to be the Queen Project, which was to me and Deborah Cox. And so when that didn't happen, and I was working with Kiki at the time, she heard it, and she was like, I would love to do it. We were trying to figure out who. And, of course, Kelly already being on it in my relationship with Kelly. I asked Kelly, you know what I'm saying, could I, you know, get her on it? But I actually had Kelly come back in and sing because I moved her around. And then we reached out to Tweet. Who I didn't have a relationship with, but of course, you know, I knew her work, she knew mine. I'm a huge Tweet fan, and she agreed to do it as well, too. So what I did, they all recorded at different places. Kiki recorded hers out here in L.A. Kelly recorded hers in New York, and I actually sent the files to Tweet, and she recorded it, and she would send them back to me before she left the studio just to see, you know, what, you know, did I get what I needed. So they all were in different places, but we made it sound like they were all together.
You basically just said that y'all, the people produced it was geniuses because it sounds like all of, like they were in a room together. The way they got out of the ad-libs and riffs and going into a verse, it seems like, oh my God. Okay. I think that's all my questions.
Yes, and the secret to that is making sure that the secret to that is making sure that the other singer comes in before the singer ends, so it sounds like they're right there on one mic.
Right.
So it's always great. It sounds like they, you know, are together and singing together and backing up each other as old school would do. So that we made the demo like that, so it was kind of easier, you know, for them to follow that path.
Oh, got it. thank you so much for coming on. I know you said you're working on Tamia's new album, but is there any other projects we should be looking out for?
Tamia's album actually comes out in September. I think you're able to pre-order it tomorrow. And then the other projects I'm working on is going to be coming out in 2019. I can't necessarily say what it is. It's just going to be my project, though. I will tell you that. And just look out for something that's going to that I've been trying to do for a while that I'm finally going to be able to do. 2019, and I'm working on some other things besides music as well too. So, but as of now, I tell people I'm kind of semi-retired. I kind of pick the projects that I want to do or need to do because I don't want anything to take me away from pastoring. I made a promise to God that would be my priority. And so I want to definitely make sure I keep that at this point in my life. But I'm always going to be attached to music in some form or
fashion. I know you say you retired, but have you ever thought about, like, doing, because I know one of my favorite producers, Raphael Sadiq, like, he does some film scores, but have you ever thought, since you, like, visually, you think about music visually, like, have you ever thought about doing, like whatever project, like, it doesn't have to be, like, a movie, but any kind of project to do. Have you done thinking about doing movie scores, anything like that?
You know what? I have been up to do some, and it never really played out. You know, there was one movie that came out before it came out. I was called to the studio, and they played a scene for me, and they sat a keyboard in front of me and said, "What would you play under this?" And the person loved it so much, they called their wife. "You got to come up here and stay there for hours." And it just kind of never happened. Every time I tried to kind of break in to that, it never kind of happened. So I just kind of assumed that God either wasn't ready for me to kind of do it at that time, or he has it for me later. So I'll always be open to movie scoring because that's one of the things that I would love to do, but you know it has to present itself, and God has to be good with me doing it.
I see you doing just to throw it out there, just throw it out in the universe. I think like Netflix or something like that. I could see you like doing a project like that, like a documentary.
No doubt. I receive it.
Yes,
I claim it.
Thanks so much for coming on and listen. I tried to hold back all the heathen questions because that's how. I'm kind of a heathen a little bit. I tease it a lot, so I try to hold it back. But thank you so much for coming on, and we appreciate it. I say all the time, you're in my top five, in my Mount Rushmore as a producer with Jimmy
Garrison,
Terry Lewis, Babyface, Raphael Sadiq. You're in that, and you deserve
thank
it.
Thank you.
Because you have the track history. You have the musical history of being aligned with those great R&B producers, and you need to be mentioned with those. So thank you so much. We just want to give reverence to you, your legend producer. Y'all give it up one more time for the legendary producer, Chef Crawford. Thank you so much for coming
thank
on the
you.
Show. We appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, we got the clap for you. Thank you so much. Yes, and I'm glad you said what you said about the church. Playing R&B music.
Yes.
Thank you so much. We play another year here, Blue Contrail, Sleep in the Middle.
Sleep in the Middle.
Yeah.
All
we'll
right
be back,
now.
Y'all.
All right, thank you.
Last decisions made from a fear of being alone. All by myself again. Sitting in the den. Phone as if it all owes me a favor as I rebirth my earlier making of a king size bed and as a queen without a king now I realize
I'm
Oh, yes, y'all. Hey, that's Blue Cantrell, Sleep in the Middle, from that bittersweet CD. Oh, man, hey. Produced by Mr. Shep Crawford. What a fantastic interview, guys. EB, Q, Lynn, and Whitney, fantastic, fantastic. And we're back with the Soul Savage Show, folks. Right.
We're back. Talk about a great birthday present. That's like the greatest. Like when I tell you, I was telling EB, I think I forgot when it was the other day when we was on the phone. I was like, this is like, I don't get hyped up because I interview people all the time, like, and be around celebrities and stuff like that. It's only a few I get excited for. But when it comes to musicians, it's like Michael, he's like the Michael, and I am putting a lot on because he deserves, but he's like the Michael Jackson of like Tbilisi. So that was like one of my life, or one of my goals was to interview him so I could check him off as one of the people I've interviewed.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, that was one,
I'm gonna back you up on that a little bit. I don't know anybody listening how long you've been listening to the Soul Savage radio show, but if you remember last year, we did a show, featuring or focusing on producers, and we were all asked to name our Mount Rushmore, and Q Lynn actually named Shep Crawford, producer songwriter. She named him, so I know that had to be special for her birthday.
Right.
Man, I know all that happening, all this in a week. Then my nephew was born yesterday. I thought he was going to be born on my birthday. That's why I didn't go too wild. I was going to go wild on my birthday, but she gave me the message. She was like, yo, he almost here. I was like, I had to cut it off. Because I know I've been alcohol deprived since January. And so, sort of, on doctor's orders, I couldn't drink it up like that. So he gave me the clearance, and I was like, I was about to do it all over. And then I had to pull back. I was like, oh, the baby being born. But it's been a great week. Just finished the whole interview was amazing, crazy. I asked amazing questions. I had my music nerd questions, had the mental part of it getting in his head, and then EB had the soul, the singers, and asked them singer questions. And then Whitney brought the whole morale in and getting deep in depth with that. Just all around great interview.
And your engineer here in Southern California.
The engineer on time with the music, everything. He put the peanut. No, I'm kidding. He put the peanut down, and everything was good. No, I'm just kidding. He was perfect. The engineer killing it. Came in when we were supposed to, the music, all that stuff, everything was perfect. So, thank you, Will, thank you, EB. Whitney, I think this is like a great way to come back from a hiatus. We've been gone for almost a month. New changes, yeah. If you're listening in, you know we used to be on every Friday, but now it's every Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I actually did throw myself off, because I was like, oh, today, yesterday, I was just relaxing. I didn't pack half of the stuff I was supposed to pack because I've been down. I have to pack, so I have a gig tomorrow, so I try to pack everything for that. And I was like, oh, yeah, we do the show today. I almost forgot about it because I'm thinking about Friday. I'm like, oh, we don't do the show on Friday no more, so I'm going to get used to it. It's a new change, but I can get used to it. It's just a little bumpy at first getting here, but that's all right. But we've been gone for a month, so what's been going on? What have y'all been up to? I know I had a whole lot going on, but before we get into that, EBD, you said we got a guest host on right now?
No, she's not on right now. She's a little shy.
She's a little shy.
So
we try to be professional when we got
in.
Company on, but we pretty much heathen, so if you, whatever yeah. you want to say, it don't matter on here. I need to tell Will, we need to get this clearance going on before we introduce our guest, or EB introduce the guest we have on. I need to know, since we had everything on time, we've been doing everything, we've been obliging all the behind the scenes promotion, we've been doing all that, we got it all in control. I want to know, can I get 5 MFs on this show? I just need to know. I've been asking you this, so I don't know how long. Can I get the 5 MFs and then a few F-bombs sprinkled in there?
No, I'll give you 2 and 2.
2 and 2? Okay, I can work with that. 2 MFs and 2 F-bombs. It's one of my favorite words.
What?
Wait, say it.
Does that stand for all the hosts, or is
Oh my God.
Two, or is that just
we get all 4 pieces.
4 pieces. I might just
Okay.
No, I mean,
Whitney, how many? Wait a minute, hold it. We already know that Q Lynn go dominate the curse word. So, Whitney, do you need any?
Hey, you know what? It's her birthday right now. I'm gonna donate mine to her.
Oh, Lord.
How about that?
You know what?
How about that?
So
I get six.
So
will I. Hey, no, wait, four. I get eight.
Oh, no.
I get eight.
Oh, my God.
I get eight. I get four MFs and then four F-bombs.
Okay.
There we go.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
That's all I need anyway.
Okay.
That's all I need.
Well, we need to do a few disclaimers. Please, women and children, you highly religious folks out there, and you got sensitive ears.
We need to promote the show as explicit. That's what we need to do. Oh, like, when we do promotions, we'd be like, everything else is Christian channels, and we the heathens. We the ones that go, I told you, this is the show. We for the people that go to church on Easter and Christmas. That's what we for. That's the only time they go Christmas, on Easter and Christmas. That's it. That's what we for. That's what I'm saying, people don't go to church twice a year.
Well, you know, you have those closet Christians anyway. They curse behind closed doors, but we try to keep this a family station. We try to keep that.
Oh, yeah. My God. EB, if you'd be so kind, introduce the guest we all so we get to
the She's shy, so she's not coming on, but my best friend is here. Her birthday is tomorrow.
Leo. Oh, she's a Leo, too. Well, she's a Leo.
And she's listening right now, but she's listening to the interview, and like, she, every time Shep said something or every time a song came on that she recognized, like, she's like covering her mouth, like trying not to scream. It's crazy.
Man, she can get off. Tell her about B-Shot. What's her name? What's your first name?
Her name is Tia, but I call her Joker. We call each other Joker.
Joker. Right. Joker.
Yeah.
You don't have to be shy on this show.
Right. EB, does she curse too? EB, does she curse also?
I'm the most ignorant out of all of them.
Man, let me tell you something. When I met her, she didn't know what a curse word was. Now she worse than Q Lynn.
Oh, no. She can't be worse than.
That's why she gotta, listen, go get her right now and tell her to come
on. She's a Leo. It makes sense.
Tell her to come on right now.
And you know what? You have something about that.
Tell her to bring her on here. Listen, we ain't shy on this show, okay? There ain't nothing to be shy about, okay? We ignorant, okay?
Oh, Lord. You know, what is it about Leo's?
For four cuss words. So that tells you how professional we are.
Go
get her real quick and tell her to come on. Just tell her to come on real quick and say,
hey, Q-Lynn.
And get on the topic.
Q-Lynn, what is it about Leo's? Because my daughter's birthday is on the 5th. And she has no problems, you know, dropping a few too. And now my brother's birthday is on the 8th.
Because we speak from the heart, we truthful. From what I know, we all truthful.
Yeah.
We just speak from the heart, and then people think we funny, but we being serious. Like, I be dead serious. I be like, that's how I feel.
Cuss somebody out.
Did she come over? Is she on?
I am. Hi, everybody.
Hey, happy early birthday.
Oh, wow. Introduce yourself.
And I'm from Columbia, South Carolina, but I currently reside in Charleston, and I'm up here for the weekend visiting my bestie, Mr. EB. He's going to show me.
Hey, turn up.
All right.
You need to ask them for, hey, Joker, or you want to go by Tia or Joker? Because I was about to, I don't know if you want me to go by your room.
Call me Tia. We're going to go Joker on the air now. We're going to do Tia on the air.
All right.
Okay, Tia. You need to, while you all here, listen, you need to get in on these Square Cash App and ask them for money, because that's what I was about to do, tell them to hit everybody. My birthday was Tuesday. And so I would tell everybody, listen, hit that Square Cash App and put in on my 40. I'll drink 40, but you need to tell EB, tell them all right now while they on, to hit that Square Cash App for your birthday this weekend. Go ahead, just tell them. Just put it out. If you got a Square Cash App, just tell them. It might be somebody. You might get lucky.
I'm looking for it now as you speak, y'all. Listen, I don't use it that often, but let me find it.
Right. Listen, anybody listening right now, my Square Cash, if y'all still want to bless me and have a champagne communion, I'm going to have champagne communion and bourbon communion this weekend. So if you want to chip in on the communion, you can hit that Square Cash at Q Lynn Green. Just type it in there and it'll pop up. Just Q Lynn, QLYNNGREEN. That's my Square Cash app. I'm just asking, if y'all want to donate to me and Tia's Square Cash app, Tia, what's your Square Cash app? I'm just throwing it out there.
It is Tia Monet, T-I-A, Monet, spelled a little ratchet, but M-O-H-N-A-Y.
Listen, get in. Listen, Will, I need donations from you because you're in the top 1%, and I know you got it. All I need is $20 on that. I can get something with that. If I got to go to Applebee's, I know Applebee's got a deal with Grey Goose and Cranberry. That was my first drink at 15. So if you want, I can get that. I can lower my standards and get that. If you want $10, $20, I'm not choosy, okay? Well, I'm asking you first because you're part of the 1% tax bracket. That's why I'm asking you first.
You better talk to EB. EB is up there. This cat.
EB is part of the 1% tax bracket as well. He might be in the middle class. He can spare pot on. No. I'm going to that Square Cash app to start lighting up.
EB lives in New York City. EB has a penthouse in New York City. Okay, all right.
I know you got a little coin. You got a little coinage. You had a little. I ain't going to put your business out there, but I know you got it. $5. I can get about three drinks. I can get three Cranberry and Grey Gooses at Applebee's. That's all. I'm not choosing.
Hey, do I get invited?
I'm not putting my business out. I got you.
I'm calling everybody.
Okay, Q-Land.
I just want to know what everybody had going on since we've been gone. I had a lot of stuff. Just got a new gig. That pays quite handsomely. I'm just blessings all over. And then also, I finally put out my Doctor series, Savvy Jam, the first episode. I just put that on there. It's on the website. It's going getting good views. Twitter being a hater though, trying to flag me, all that stuff. We're gonna get that straightened out. So, but thank y'all to everybody that follows me on all my social media that checked it out. I'm getting good responses from everybody. We had a good time. I'll talk about the Savvy Jam. We did Childish Gambino and a Bootsy Collins mashup with music, and it got a pretty good response to it. So we still shooting for it. We start production on it again, I think, in a couple months. We're going to get right back to it. And then also, I finally uploaded all the past shows. I found one lost file of when we had Haley on with Whitney's sister. And co-founder is told by her where she got mad. I started laughing when she got mad because Dansby gave the vocal coach a 9 out of 10 vocal coach.
Oh, no.
Like, I didn't see Kendall.
What are you talking about?
Do we have to?
I was like, well, I feel like I'm qualified because I started to call like, what? She was salty the whole time. And then when EB said that he gave Mary J. Blige a 9 out of 10, she was like, well, at least he got something. I was like, this is right. And then we was like, well, you can listen to his vocal coach's show that's on Studio Buzz every week. The lawyer said, she's like, no, I'm busy. I was like, oh, you booked out here, Kevin Price? Really? Really? He's being disrespectful. That show is funny. It's uploaded on there. I finally found it. That show is hilarious. But I think we EB, I know you had a lot of content you put out. Tell them about all the DJ mixes you have on your website.
Man.
Tell them about that.
It's wild. So I've had time to put up some of my mixes on MixCloud. I still have like 7 more mixes. The process of uploading them is so long, but I have a Faith Evans mix that came out of nowhere. I just wanted to focus on Faith a little bit. I have a Easy Sunday mix. It's like full of like 70s and 80s smooth grooves. I got a disco dance club mix up there. I mean, y'all got to check out my Mixcloud. I'm on Mixcloud.
And you know Faith, my girl, too, so I listened to it.
Yo, when I posted it, it was crazy because I didn't mean to. I was just talking about one day I was on Twitter, I think, listening to Faith's first album, and I was just talking about it. And people were actually talking to me, and I realized this was a huge album. Faith was a huge presence in R&B. She is a huge presence in R&B. And I started with just the first album. Before I knew it, I was like, oh, we a couple albums in now. You know what? I'm just going to make a mix.
Man, listen. I know you're going to get mad. Listen, we need to have an R&B battle between Faith Evans versus Mary J. Blige and just go.
We can do that.
Like we did the Patty and Rita thing. We did
the song.
Oh, we need to play the What's Wrong With You game with Tia. I just thought of that. We're going to do that before the show over with.
The game, yeah, ATL.
Listen, you know, Faith Evans is my girl, so I'm going to go at you. You better come. I know you better come with the verbal gun, EB, because you know that's my girl, so we going in.
Right. Okay? You know, Mary,
I ain't pulling no punches. We going in when
listen,
we have the debate.
I get it. But I got to say this. while we're talking about great.
We planning
singers.
That too. That's a real thing. I just thought of that when he just talked.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't plan that
last
show.
Last night, I went to this concert. I mentioned it a little bit on the interview earlier, guys.
Mickey Howard.
I went to Mickey Howard. And y'all know
top
I love
10,
Mickey. I told her
top
I was coming
10,
beforehand. Listen, I had to like send her a DM on Twitter and tell her I'm coming, and she was excited. So I got there, and the show was like great. I'm just going to tell y'all everything. I was on a date, a first date, which I didn't plan on being on. But the show is going great, and Mickey's in the audience, like, singing, and, like, she's, like, gasped a little bit, and Melissa Morgan is in the audience. So, of course, everybody's excited. The last song Mickey sang was Love Under New Management, and she called Melissa Morgan up there to sing with her.
Hey,
y'all, I started crying. Like, there were tears, and I'm trying to record. My date had to take the phone and record for me because I was shaking. Like, it was one of those musical moments where I realized that, y'all, we in trouble. Like, we don't have that no more. We don't have singers that can do that and will do that and know music in the way that those people did. Man, that was a moment I wanted everybody to be there. Mickey's band was on point, her musical director. That man deserves an award. Her background singers, though, I have seen everybody you can imagine live. I've never heard a background section like Mickey's, and I have to ask her who they were because they were singing their asses off.
Oh, man, I gotta look them up.
Man, they was hitting Q-Lynn. They was hitting. I mean, the band was hitting, but the background vocals.
Oh yeah, New York musicians be hitting. They got make rent, so they gotta hit hard.
Right. But they gotta hit hard. Look, rent ain't no joke.
I'm just saying, it's real out there. You know,
it's real. That's the reason.
$1,000 ain't nothing in New York. You gotta make more than that.
I wish I knew what about, man.
Play like the Bills is doing every show.
Damn.
That's how it is in New York. But I was going, before we go to break real quick, dang, I lost my train of thought. Oh, when you were saying about we in trouble with, what about like Layla Hathaway and Legacy? Like they always like jumping on each other's show and Fantasia and all them. Like they do stuff like that. I mean the ones like the...
Right.
The cream
but
of the crop of R&B. I ain't talking about like the new,
no, yeah,
new
you're right,
generation of ones. I'm talking about them like mid-30s
type. You're right. I think what I'm saying is like if you turned on a radio in 85, 86, 87, you heard Regina Bell, Mickey Howard, Melissa Morgan, Melba Moore, Anita Baker. Like those were the people you heard on the radio. So those were like the A-listers.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They could do
that. Oh, I get what you're saying.
Now when you turn on the radio, you don't hear the people you hear on the radio now. And I vented a little bit last night after the show because I get my one F word right now. I was fucked up on whiskey like all night.
I almost spit my water out when you said that.
So I was venting like last night on my Insta story, like just going in, and I was saying that you know the people that people go up for now to turn the radio. If you take away the echo machines and they win machines and the choreography. They ain't nothing, man. Like compared to what I witnessed last night, they can't do it. But
you're
100%
right, man. I think some of them tried to team up, but like you said, behind that, that Pro Tools and all that extra equipment they needed. What was his name? August Alsina. I remember it was one show they all did a track together. It was like Trey Songz and Chris Brown. I was like, ain't nobody hitting no kind of note on this song.
I don't know how.
And they were singing live. I was like. I know I'm kind of throwing shots out there, but I'm just saying. I think I wrote about it on my website, but that wasn't good. But like you said, you're 100% talking right. But yeah, what we're going to do right here, we're going to take a real quick break because we only got 20 minutes and we're going to knock out all this. We ain't doing the topic this show because we ain't got time. We're just going to run through all these news topics very swiftly. And when we come back from break, we're going to get into raggedy and savvy news. We'll be back, y'all.
Metamorphosis. By definition, it means a marked developmental change that takes place in a being after its birth, causing a transformation so thorough that when that transformation is complete, there is no resemblance in the appearance, movement, or behavior of the former being. butterflies are beauty floating, but that's not the way they begin their journey. Just as every melody starts with one note, and then it grows into a symphony. Despise not the day of small beginnings, because the expected end for you is something beautiful and grand and graceful. And though where you started was not your best, and the process of change is uncomfortable and ugly, you can't run from it. Who you are and what you were born to do is waiting for you on the other side of this metamorphosis. Diamonds shine, I am glowing. Not a worry or care for me. Got me wondering how people say, never knowing what it costs to be.
Kelly Price. It's called Metamorphosis. And welcome back to the Soul Savage Show. EB, Q Lynn Green, Whitney, and special guest Tia. All right.
I'm just playing that. Yeah. Do that little bass riff in there. I love that bass riff in that song. It was like, I should have asked, damn, that's the question I had was like, was he like inspired by Nina Simone with that? Cause that's what that sound like. Is a Nina Simone like, kind of, arrangement with that, I should have asked, damn, that's all I was gonna ask him, was, that an upright bass he's playing? Is this another music nerd question? I'll DM it to him or something. But we're back, Soul Savage Radio. We'll get it right into it because we only got like 15 minutes left and we ain't got that much. So whatever we don't finish, we'll save for next week. So we're going to get into the raggedy news first. Well, you said you had some raggedy news. Go ahead first. You get kind of long with it, so you can go ahead.
Well, since you cut out my 6 minutes of rage, I just wanted one.
Look what time it is. I told you this is, we got new time, new changes, and guess what new changes
I understand.
Is. And you told me before the show, it's another show to come on after this, so we gotta hurry up and
that's
get
exactly.
off the airway.
No, I'm not gonna, I do understand. Now, right. we'll do the 6 minutes of rage next week because I have plenty, like 2 pages of it, right?
And I know, that's what I'm saying. We've been gone for a month and Trump gets, you should have 50 because every day is something new with him. I don't even know where to start with that. Ooh, I can say it now, that motherfucker. Oh. Man, that dude pissed me off like since June. I think a lot since he's been in office, even pissing me off. So, man, I was about to say another cuss word, but I'm gonna save him.
Please save him. Anyway, my raggedy news is, hey, folks, if you haven't noticed this clown in the White House, he's a black preacher, right? And he's on the. You know who I'm talking about.
I didn't even look into it because it was pissing me off reading it. Go
That's
ahead,
right. Bro. The National Diversity Coalition. Now, let me tell you what's happening.
I need to add, sorry to cut you off, but can I say the N-word too? No N-words.
We can't do that.
I gotta say it though, cause can I just call them Nick? I can't call them.
Go ahead. Knock yourself out.
Them niggas. Okay, go ahead. I just wanted to say that.
Oh Lord Jesus. Oh boy. So much for a family show, all right? Anyway, hey, this clown, and he's a preacher, and I'm calling him a clown. Pastor Daryl C. Scott, Cleveland Heights, Ohio. He's a national board member of the National Diversity Coalition for Trump. Now let me tell you guys, back in 2016, before Trump was elected, Scott and Trump and his personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, co-founder of the National Diversity Coalition, they got together and formed this so-called coalition, and he has the nerve of calling Democrats the pimps, and he called out President Obama, said, you know, he gets a pass, you know, but they were actually pimping the inner cities. I'm telling you, this guy is atrocious, and if you go into his church, you got to keep your damn money. It's a damn shame. I wouldn't put a damn thing in the basket. Okay. I'm using the D word here. All right. But anyway, along with that knucklehead, remember, last year or, you know, year before last, when that clown Mark Burns, I know E.B. Kulin and Whitney, you guys know about it, and Teal, you probably knew. He admit falsifying his biographical claim, saying he's a Bachelor of Science. He went to the Greenville University. He was in the Army Reserves. He was not. He was actually in the National Guard. He said he went to this college and he graduated. He was not. He went for one semester. And when CNN interviewed this clown, they ended up asking him all this stuff, and he walked out of their church. He left the interviewer in his church, and he also claimed that he was a Kappa, and the Kappa Alpha Psi, they called this clown out. I just want to call out these black so-called preachers out here that's selling us out, along with these so-called blacks for Trump.
He gonna say that Trump doing stuff for black people, more black people than any president. Oh man, I was ready. He looks like that porn star Brian Pumper. That's who he looked like. Y'all know who that is. he looks just like it. I need to get a side by side picture and put it on there. Y'all gonna be like, yep. He looked like a porn star. Is all I'm saying. That pastor that he's talking about. If you Google it,
what a jerk,
man. Well, yeah, man, that is raggedy news. That needs to be, that's why I said it told you to go first, because as I saw that earlier today, actually, somebody had it on their timeline on Instagram, and I just saw the video of what he's saying. I'm like, he's been acting like that since, though. He's been advocating for him before he got in office, though. That dude you talk about.
That's what I'm saying. Absolutely.
I put the quotation marks around that pastor, because he trash. But, yeah, we going to keep moving on. Thank you for that, Will, because he needs to be on top of Raggedy News, because he's raggedy. I don't even care to know what his name is no more. That nigga, that's what I was saying. I said again, that's my last N-word.
His name is Daryl C. Scott. Daryl C. Scott.
I can't say it. I got my N-word limit, so I can't say it again, but I was going to say that N-word. But yeah. I don't really want to talk about this, Monique. I had Monique and Roseanne in the, because I saw what she said on that news show that she was on. I don't even want to spend that much time on it because there ain't that much to get worked up over. Like, I feel like she's trying to work some kind of angle, because this don't make no sense for you advocating for this woman, talking about that's your sister in comedy. I don't even want to go through this. Well, what did y'all think about that real quick before we go on with the rest of the thing?
She's trying to get paid.
That's what I was thinking as well. Y'all think the same thing?
Because that don't make no sense.
Right.
But not in this situation.
Yeah, that was raggedy news. And I was like, girl, what are you doing right now? That ain't making no sense. And then in the same breath, you still talk about Tyler Perry and all that. Like, you trying to make sense. I'm like, he apologized from what I heard in the private phone conversation at least. He apologized, and you still want more. Like, he said he was, like, even though you weren't talking about getting money, he still was, like, apologizing, and you got that. But you talk about publicly. I'm like, I feel like you're doing too much. I feel like if somebody apologized, then they accept it. But she talking about publicly, I don't know. That's a tricky thing. I don't know. I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that. She's still, like, saying, she probably say that's different because they publicly, like, ruined her or whatever, saying because she got blackballed and all that stuff. But I don't know, man. I'm just tired of talking about it. It's too much. But I want to get to the Tennessee woman. I read the story yesterday. It said a Tennessee woman set a house on fire because she wasn't invited to a house party.
That was crazy. That's crazy.
The roof was on fire, literally.
Yeah.
Yes. He got the gasoline out the car, poured it.
There was no dance.
And they drove off.
I was like, that ain't no dance. The roof is on fire. They used to chant that in old school parties. They was like, nah. They was like, at this party, they was like, nah, the roof is literally on fire.
Crazy.
That was wild when I read
it.
That was crazy. Yo, the woman looked crazy. I saw the mugshot of the lady. I'm trying to pull it up now. That woman looked like off a rocker, like for real. Like if somebody said, hey, this lady just burned the house on fire for that. And then when you look at it, you'd be like, oh, yep, that makes sense that she did that.
Well, people, it's wild.
Where did this happen? HQ Lynn, where did this happen? Where?
It's in Tennessee. It said the story. I was trying to pull it up to get details, see what the woman, if she's still in jail or not, because that's sort of grand lawsuit. Wouldn't that be first degree? Second degree, because there were people in there when she burned it?
Yeah, arson.
Arson, yeah. First degree arson.
Arson. Oh, yeah. Larson is when you burglarize something.
Yeah, when you steal it.
Arson, wouldn't that be second degree? Because people, is second degree the one where if you get second degree arson because it was people in the house when you said it?
No, that's first degree.
I'm trying to see if there was people in there or was it just, because I would think the people would be in there.
It doesn't matter. She set it on fire. That's first degree.
Oh, no, well, I was just saying, was it level to it if somebody was in there or whatever?
Well, then
I think that makes it, I think that adds to it.
What'd you say, Evie? What?
They should have invited her to the party. It's their fault.
That's hilarious.
No. That's no, it's not that deep. It's not that
that's
deep.
That's terrible. What was you about to say, Whitney? Go ahead.
I don't even remember.
Oh my God, that's funny. Oh but I just God. I thought that deserved raggedy news. That was raggedy news worthy. We got 5 minutes left, so I'm gonna breeze through this. But had y'all read the story about a white supremacist doctor apologized for past online racist antics? It was mostly geared towards Jewish people and saying that they need to be need to be ostracized because they don't believe in basically whiteness, that they're not the ideal of whiteness, basically, is what his online stuff is. And he talking about how, wait, no, that was a whole other story that said that, but I was trying to pull it up on my thing. But what did y'all think about that story? I'm going to pull it up real quick and get more details into it. Did y'all see that story, the one I'm talking about?
I didn't see it.
I've seen a little bit of it. I forget where he posted his comments, but it doesn't matter because they were racist. He shouldn't have said it. Like his,
yeah, that was, I was just giving a summary. Yeah.
Like, yeah, he, no. I'm so tired of stuff like that. Like, we don't even need to talk about film. Like, that's how I feel. Like, that's that raggedy. Like, we shouldn't even give him any type of attention because he put that out there. Like, we know them people exist, but you know what? If that's really how you feel, just keep it to yourself. Like, I'm tired of reading about you and the stuff you saying about people. Like, just go somewhere and let people, like, just let people live. I just don't get it. Like, are y'all not tired? Like, dang. Like, we ain't nobody bothering you. You just.
And why is he in a doctor position, somebody like that? Because that, right. You think, like, what if he has, like, Jewish patients, black patients, like any other, mm-hmm. like any kind of minority, like what is his practices with that? You know what I mean? It's like a,
right.
It's just like with police, like that whole mentality, like that's what I'd be trying to get to. Like I don't like people like that have like certain positions to where it's like life or death to somebody. That's what I'd be, right. That's what I think. But just to give a summary before we move on, is a doctor from Bronx, New York. It says he was accused earlier this week of making a number of racist semantic comments, and it says, oh yeah, this was the guy, this was the story I was reading. He gonna say, this is a quote from him, it says, it's been very painful, excuse me, been very painful for me overall. Like, that's what be killing me. Like, you get caught with all the racist stuff that you actually feel, and who knows if you still feel like that or not, but this causing you pain. Like, come on.
That's
that cop out stuff.
Their pain is not genuine because what they feel is not pain. It's embarrassment and the shame because
right.
you got caught being yourself. And it's like they try to take the focus off of their mindset and all of the people that they've hurt by saying, oh, this causes me pain. What you're really saying is I don't give a damn about what anyone else felt or how I hurt anyone or how my thoughts or views are problematic, but I'm sorry I got caught. That's what it is.
And then one of his comments was online, says whites are being subjected to a concerted attack by people of color. Like, this is the people that I be talking about, people that think like that. You probably still think like that. And then it says he's from I don't know if he still works there or not, but I'm trying to pull up where this is. He's a resident radiologist at Montefiore Medical Center in the Bronx. So, yeah, I don't know if he still got a job or not, but I thought that was raggedy. Real quick, the cap off savvy news. I just had it. It's only like two or three. But I just want to mention, I never give him credit, this NBA player. I never give him credit. If anybody knows my online mm-hmm. history, and then on this show, I've made a few comments on here, you know, cracking jokes and stuff. As a player, I can't stand him. But always as a humanitarian for the past few years, if you just look in online records, it's all, if you just track, just pick up my name and LeBron James, all you go see is his commentary on basketball. I've never commented on him outside of basketball and all the stuff he had going on. I always thought he was a great person personally as a human, but as a basketball player, I think he trashed. But just to not be so, like, to cap that off with that, be a conjunction. I'm not even going to add a conjunction. I'm just going to say LeBron James, he just opened a new school. It's called I Promise in his hometown, Akron, Ohio, and all these benefits of giving free lunch programs to the kids and to the parents, DVD programs for them, and also giving, he has it in there that is guaranteed that the students there get free tuition.
He should be applauded.
All that needs to be applauded.
That's right.
I never publicly give him credit for that, but I think he's always been a great humanitarian, so I'm going to give him that respect because he deserves it. And then also I think, just to leave my little comment with Questlove, I read what he said on Instagram. He said, this is dope that he's doing, but it shouldn't even be left up to him. His government should be following the same line he's doing. Because for him to do that, he just got a brand new contract with the Lakers, $150 plus million. Like, there's no way to where this man can create his own school in at-risk youth. Kids that, you know, need this kind of programming that, you know, go through all that stuff. It should be no reason why the government should do that. And that just lets you know how greedy the government is and any public official that lies. They always trying to cut. They do it all the time, cut and teach. But I won't get into that. That could be 6 minutes of rage. We going off. I'm going to get on that.
We'll cover that next week.
It's about savvy news. So I'm going to stick with savvy news and just say, LeBron, you did your thing. A great humanitarian, and if y'all have anything, I think that'll be the last because we already out of time. Y'all give y'all opinions on LeBron. If you have anything else to add before we get to this afternoon talk,
I just want to say, aren't basketball players the ones that they said to just shut up and dribble?
Right.
That was the educational secretary. She said that garbage.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Oh God, we'll talk about that next week. Yep.
That whole
administration is trash. That entire administration is trash.
Yes, man. This has been the Soul Savage Radio Show. We back y'all. New time every Thursday from 4 to 6 Pacific Standard Time, 7 to 9 Eastern Standard Time. And thank you. We had an amazing interview guest on earlier today, Grammy Award winning producer, songwriter, musician, Shep Crawford, one of my top 5 favorite producers of all time. It was a great interview, great. I know Tia did get on. I was going to ask this a question. Wait, just real quick, though. We just going to ask her what's wrong with you, gang. We just going to do the one. Is she on? Is she next to you, EB?
I'm on. I'm right here. I'm on.
Okay. Okay, maybe I'll do 3. I might do the last 3. Okay. Off the Wall or Thriller, what you picking?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I'm
going to
say Off the Wall on that one.
This, you talking right. All right, you got it. This is the premise of the game. You basically got to pick what I pick. That's the premise of the game.
The game is rigged. The game is rigged.
As I go. So if you get at least 2 out of 3 of these, then you talking right.
Okay, Tia, the game is rigged.
Shut up, Will. You keep jumping in with that. You're over there lying. This is not rigged. This is a perfect game. Number 2. Patty versus Aretha, who you pick?
No. I'm going to have to go with Patty on that one.
Oh, my God.
You talking right. You talking right. I keep going up on the score against EV, man. I don't know what it is. I feel like the energy is right. I don't know what it is. I think it's because it's my birthday week, but we're going to go on. The last one, Brian McKnight or Babyface?
That's a hard one. That's really a hard one. I like them both. I'm
going
to have to say Babyface on that one.
You talking right. And guess what? The conclusion of the game is there's nothing wrong with Miss Tia. Ain't nothing wrong with her. She aced it. I didn't even have to try to level up songs. I didn't have to pick that. She aced it all the way. Nothing wrong with you. I got a 40 ounce with your name on it, Tia. I'm a square cast you. 275, the exact change to where you go to convenience store and get that same eyes. On me, you going to get a 40 ounce. On me. For winning the, what's wrong with you guys?
So you
oh, wait, this is a bonus. This is a bonus. We about to leave y'all. We about to leave in about a minute, but. This is a bonus one, Tia. Who do you think had the best cocaine? Faith Evans or Mary J. Blige?
Listen, let's stop right now. Okay, wait. Q-Lynn. What's your address? Because she's going to need a place to stay tonight.
No, you got to answer the question. Who you picking, Faith Evans or Mary J. Blige? Who you picking?
It's Mary Q. Lynn.
It's who? Is Mary? Easy just threatened you to kick you out, so I'm taking that as faith.
I told you the game was rigged. I told you the game was rigged.
This is Radio Show, y'all. We will be back next week, every Thursday, 4 to 6 Pacific Standard Time. And my savvy heathen talk is, I want to thank my parents for having sex so I can be here and celebrate my birthday on Tuesday. I was going to give a shout out to them for having sex, for procreating me so I can be here. Thank y'all so much for going wrong so I can be here. I appreciate that.
I know EB does. I know EB does. EB? EB, what is...
We'll be back, y'all. We'll
EB,
back
what is your me. Talk? EB, you gotta say it. You gotta say it, EB.
Mine is, Eco Patty over Risa, so she's gonna need one of y'all address tonight. And
we're
gonna get
hey, happy birthday, Pia. Happy birthday.
EB, that wasn't the one. Hey, EB, you gotta talk about, wait, where do you grab them, EB?
In the ball.
Oh my goodness. Hey folks, if you witness this, you wish witness a wild party every Thursday here on Studio W the Buzz. I can hardly contain myself. Q-Lynn, happy birthday. Tia, happy birthday. And happy birthday to Tone Loken, the RVA, and my baby, Nikki B. All right, folks, we'll be back next week, Thursday. Remember the time, 4 p.m. PST, 6 on Central, and 7 o'clock on the East Coast. We'll be back. Mr. Melody is coming up with his Mellow Moves Blues and Jazz Show. All right, stay tuned, folks, to the Buzz. You are cheating around, trying to fight free. If the world got dream a genie, I bleed yours away from me.
Had three wishes, you see me close my eyes. Try to concentrate and like 1, 2, 3.
Alright, we're back. The Soul 70 Show. We just ended that. Hey, we have Mr. Melody and Mellow Moves coming up here on Studio W the Buzz. Alright, stay tuned. Alright. Alright, hey, we had a little interference, but that's okay. Alright, Mr. Melody and his Mellow Moves is coming up.